The continued burning of fossil fuels, soil erosion, acid rain, deforestation are threatening the environment of the whole world. Can our planet be saved, or is it too late? Lester Brown and the World Watch Institute believe the next 40 years will decide. For the past 7 years, Brown and the Institute have been issuing annual reports charting the environmental state of the world. The report contains chapters outlining worldwide policy changes that need to be made to reverse the trend toward global self-destruction. This is the first of a two-part interview with Lester Brown about the global environment. Today we discuss the state of the world 1990. The biggest political story this past year was the changes in Eastern Europe. I asked Lester Brown if those changes might affect the environment.
I suppose the fortunate thing about this year, 1990, is that it represents a potential pivotal point in historical terms. The level of public concern about environmental issues, indeed about the future of the planet, is rising steadily. As it does so, the Cold War is winding down, and this at least creates the possibility of a major reordering of priorities in the use of public resources. We now have an opportunity to quite literally redefine security, recognizing that the principal threats to our future well-being now come less from military aggression and more from environmental degradation.
What are some of the other areas of improvement that you've seen in the past year?
Well, I suppose at the broader level, the political change in Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union over the past year restore one's faith in miracles. And it's probably going to take a miracle to reverse the environmental degradation of the planet. Each year in our State of the World report, we in effect give the Earth an annual physical examination. And the results of this annual physical are not particularly reassuring. For example, each year we notice that the Earth's forests are smaller, the deserts are larger, the amount of topsoil in our cropland is diminishing, the stratospheric ozone layer that protects us from harmful ultraviolet radiation is slowly being depleted, the number of plant and animal species on Earth is diminishing, the level of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere that are driving the global warming are increasing. So the trends are all still headed in the wrong direction. And the challenge now is to try to get at least some of these trends turned around during this decade. If we fail, then there's a good chance that by the end of this decade or shortly thereafter, that environmental degradation will lead to economic decline in many parts of the world, as it is already doing in parts of Africa. And then we'll be in a situation where environmental degradation and economic decline could begin to feed on each other, perhaps leading to social disintegration.
You described 1989 as the year that environmental issues moved into the political mainstream. What's some of the evidence for that?
In 1988, environmental issues moved into the mainstream of the communications media. Environmental issues moved onto page one of newspapers and onto the covers of weekly news magazines. In 1989, political leaders, taking their cue, I think, in part from the communications media, began to realize that environmental issues were serious issues from a political point of view. And so there was a scramble by national political leaders, particularly in Europe, to begin to associate themselves with environmental issues. For example, Prime Minister Thatcher in January of 1989 hosted an international conference on depletion of the stratospheric ozone layer. Now in 1990, I think we're reaching a point where political leaders have to go beyond hosting conferences and issuing proclamations and actually taking some of the tough decisions in energy policy and population policy that are needed if the world is to get onto an environmentally sustainable economic path.
Well, in the United States, George Bush has made it clear he wants to be known as the environmental president. How do you think he's doing in that area?
I'm afraid not too well at this point. The United States used to be a leader on global environmental issues. And at home, we pioneered in setting up the Environmental Protection Agency, Council on Environmental Quality, passing the initial Clean Air Act and Clean Water Act, all during the Nixon administration. President Bush hasn't come close to even matching President Nixon in terms of the initiatives, much less providing leadership at the international level. In fact, the international community now views the United States as being part of the problem rather than part of the solution.
Politically, why is it important to see environmental issues as global issues, as international issues?
The early environmental problems like air and water pollution were pretty much local problems faced by local communities and within, for the most part, national boundaries. But now there's so many environmental problems that are becoming international, like acid rain, for example, between the United States and Canada or within within Europe, and problems like deforestation of the Himalayas that affect the degree of flooding in all the countries in the subcontinent, like India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, and so forth. Beyond that, we now have genuinely global environmental issues for the first time, such as ozone depletion and climate change. No country acting unilaterally can stabilize its climate. Only the countries throughout the world working together can stabilize the Earth's climate. In protecting the ozone layer, one country can phase out the use of chlorofluorocarbons, the chemicals that damage the ozone layer, altogether. But if other countries don't do the same thing, then the ozone layer will be destroyed everywhere.
You said that stopping population growth is really one of the priorities in creating a sustainable society. Why?
The reason we think we need to pay a lot more attention to population growth and the need for family planning is because it looks to us as though population growth is going to slow in any event. The only question is whether it will slow because countries move quickly towards smaller families or because they fail to and death rates begin to rise as a result of increased hunger and malnutrition. And for a lot of third world countries, there are two models that they can look to. One we could call the Chinese model, where the government makes a serious effort to get the brakes on population growth to avoid a deterioration in living standards. The other model is what one might call the Ethiopian model, which is one where they pay no attention whatsoever to family planning and let population growth continue and then face a situation where the number of people outruns the food supply and they periodically experience massive famine. Ethiopia, again, this year is facing famine, and unless there's major food relief, three or four million people could face starvation, according to the reports, and this is maybe the fourth famine or threat of famine that's occurred in Ethiopia over the last decade or two.
Lester Brown, we have an Earth Day coming up, April 22nd of this year. It's the 20th anniversary celebration of the first Earth Day. What are your hopes or expectations for it?
My hopes may be somewhat biased by the fact that I'm on the board of directors and the International Advisory Board as well. But it looks to us as though Earth Day in 1990 will be celebrated with activities and events of various kinds in more than 120 countries. This contrasts sharply with 1970, when the first Earth Day was principally a U.S. event. It looks to us as though the public outpouring of concern that we think is going to occur on Earth Day, Sunday, April 22nd, will dwarf any previous political demonstration of concern on any issue anywhere. There literally could be tens of millions of people around the world participating in various activities and events that will demonstrate their concern about what's happening to the Earth's environment. We think that this demonstration of concern about the future of the planet will send a message to national political leaders everywhere, making it clear that the time has come when people expect them to take action to reverse the degradation of the planet, and that making speeches and issuing communiques is simply no longer sufficient.
Do you have any suggestions on things people could do in their day-to-day life that would help environmentally?
The traditional advice on that question has been, you know, recycle your newspapers, return your bottles, and that sort of thing. And those things are still important, but far more important now, given the limited amount of time we have, is the need to become politically active, and to write letters to state governors, members of Congress, the White House. To actively lobby at the local and the national level on important environmental issues. We're beyond the point where we can sit back and expect a handful of environmentalists to bring about the amount of change that's needed in the time that's available.
Well, you've created a scenario of what a sustainable society might look like as it developed in the next 40 years, if indeed we were able to develop it. Next time on Fresh Air, why don't we talk about that?
Good idea.
Lester Brown is the head of the World Watch Institute, and he's the co-author of their new report, The State of the World, 1990.